HR performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of Mayor's Bread has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Full report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABread.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 388-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back into hour two, about 15 minutes, and we got about that to welcome in the one and only Tony Black. Happy New Year, Tony. Well, he might be their case, but I'm not hearing him. There he is. Tony.
Hey, Steve, you went dead on me for a second.
Yeah, no, I could sort of tell that usually you can hear a little background and I didn't have you, so good morning. Happy New Year.
Good morning. Happy New Year, Steve, and keep up the good work. You're doing a great job in your benefit. You benefit racing. I was talking to a friend of mine last night. You might know the name, Vince Percali Jr., won a few thousand, 3,000 or 4,000 races.
Sure.
And he told me last night, he says, you know, I just started listening to that guy, Bick. He does a great job. And he says, and when you're on, you guys do good together. I said, hey, Jimbo, thanks a lot, because I was thinking of Jimbo anyway, and I almost called him yesterday. There was a bunch of stranded cars on a highway on the way to Virginia, right? Well,
yep.
When Jimbo, when he called me, he wanted to tell me one other thing. He says, do you know, come February the 19th, we were stranded for 21 hours on the way to Charlestown the day I was supposed to get married, and you were my best man. I says, yeah, Jimbo, I remember that. And you know what brought it back, my memory back, was watching that on the news. He says, yeah, he says, you know, I got married and you were best man. And it was on the 20th that I finally got married. He says, you realize I've been married 50 years come February 20th. I says, oh, geez. It's amazing that a jock can make it 50 years with one woman. I says, I've had three of them. In the marriages, I says, you're so lucky. You kept the same one, and she kept you and put up with you. I says, you might have set a record when it comes to jockeys and marriages.
It's funny that I'm glad you brought it up because I had forgotten. I didn't make that association. I did bring it up on today's Thursday, so it would have been Tuesday morning when that whole thing was unfolding in Virginia, you know, with the accident and then the roads being impassable and just an incredible scenario. But I had completely forgotten that story, and you're one of the few people that could relate to people being stuck in a car and eventually running out of gas and all the things associated, staying warm, not having anything to eat, how to take care of personal business. I mean, it's a wild scenario. And of course, you didn't have the situation that everybody that was able to communicate at least with their phones for a while, over the 20, in some cases, what, 27 hours?
Yeah, we were Tim 21 Kane. Hours. We were 21 hours in that car.
Amazing.
We ran out of gas like at midnight, and they didn't come and get us until like 10 o'clock the next morning.
Wow.
And I'll never forget the one thing that saved us. We threw our dirty clothes, laundry. We were going to be in Charlestown for a few days. We threw our laundry in the trunk of the car, and we also had all the booze for the wedding. So I had been pushing out all day. When we could get out and move, I'd push out. I was soaking wet. It was lucky we had the laundry in the trunk of the car because I could change and put on the dirty clothes. At least they were dry. And then one of the other racetrackers, and I'll never forget him because he just passed on, Denny. Don't even know Denny's last name. He was coming to Charlestown because he was from Charlestown. He ran out of gas and climbed in our car. We weren't smart enough to ration the gas. We ran out of gas. But the one thing we did have, we had plenty of fuel for the spirits. We had all the food for the wedding in the trunk of the car, and by the time we got to Charlestown, Denny and his buddy and me and Jimbo, I think we consumed most of that booze. We had to go buy booze for the reception when we got to Charlestown. It's a memory that Jimbo and I laugh about it to this day, and that was, what, 1972? And I think, man, Jimbo, here we are, I'm 70, and you're going to be turning 69. He says, yeah, I'll be 69 this year. I says, well, I'm already 70. And we had the bug together. Callie and me had the bug. He was riding in Charlestown, then went to Florida. I stayed at Keystone, well, it was Liberty Bell. What am I saying? Keystone. It was Liberty Bell. And then came to Jersey, and we both lost the bug around the same time, in 71. But it's amazing. We've been friends all these years, and it doesn't take much to spark our memory of some of the experiences we've had.
No, well, this was an exceptional and an oddity that people were just aghast. I mean, following the situation. I mean, I don't think anybody. Most people have had some incidents where you get stranded, but not. Not like that. I mean, it's crazy. I'm reminded myself of when you talk about having all the liquor for the reception. I think I've mentioned this over the years. My father, when he was in the Coast Guard and when they were getting married, my dad was the morale officer on the Coast Guard cutter Duane. And at the time, I don't know if he was at that point, he might have been a lieutenant JG and he was a junior officer. So he was in charge of how many bottles of liquor all the men on the boat could have. But nobody was keeping track of how much liquor my dad, was bringing back at any one time. And for their wedding, because he was coming back for Christmas break, and they got married on Christmas Eve, 1953. So they were putting into Hamilton, Bermuda. They would go from Brooklyn to Halifax to Hamilton. They were a weather patrol boat, and so my dad was able to buy all the liquor for the wedding in Bermuda, duty free. So he brought back cases of liquor for the wedding. And this is fresh in my mind, too, because Tina, while we were busy here between Christmas and New Year's, some dead time after the kids came and went, Tina wanted to clean up a few of these kitchen cabinets. And I've got liquor, literally liquor, from my parents' wedding that was never opened. And at some point, my mother in Connecticut, in Manchester, one holiday, said, "Here, take these. Get the, I'm cleaning out." She was cleaning out her cabinets. I said, "Take these." So I've got, and it's a lot of oddball liqueurs like Benedictine, you know, B&B, and there's an unopened bottle of Galliano. You know, there's these bottles from the 50s, and then there's like crazy things like banana, you know, Curacao, and all these crazy liquors. But that they're literally from my parents' wedding, the same kind of thing that you guys were doing, but they've never been cracked.
Well, you know what? When you're on the side of the road or stuck in a blizzard, you don't even care what you're drinking, but it does help to drink a little bit. It's just you wonder. Geez, you know, when the booze wears off, I hope I don't fall asleep and freeze to death before the booze wears off. And I'll never forget, Jimbo, we can't fall asleep now. We can't fall asleep. We don't know how long we're going to be here. And the more we were getting cold, and these two guys that we picked up, grooms that were going down there, Jimbo says, I'll never forget. He says, come on, let's just sit next to each other. Before you know it, we're sitting next to each other, and we've got our arms around each other, and we're cuddled up, like trying to keep each other warm. And I said, Jimbo, if we wind up freezing to death, they're going to find us in a really strange position. He says, as long as we're warm, who cares, Black, who cares? You know, who cares? As long as we're warm. And I'll never forget, we put on every stitch of dirty clothes we had in the trunk of the car, and we were still freezing. And I thought to myself,
unbelievable.
I remember saying to Jimbo, I said, you know, it's one thing when you're galloping horses and you're really cold, freezing, and you're numb, you know, but you know you're going to get back to the barn. You know, that's the coldest I've ever been, galloping horses in the middle of winter. But you know you're going to get back to the barn, and you can get warmed up before you get on the next one. I said, the thing about this is sitting in a car, run out of gas, and you don't know when you're going to get rescued. I said, there ain't no place to warm up waiting for the next one like you can when you're getting on horses. But it's a strange feeling. When I saw those people 27 hours, I said, I hope they were smarter than Jimbo and me. And they at least turned their car on and off and saved the gas, because we didn't.
Why? Because you probably didn't think it would, you know, it was going to hold you. Yeah, you were going to end up stuck there. And you know, I don't want to bring up what's a sad topic, but it's already been sad all week, Tony. We've had so many passings, both equine and human. But that commuting, which still goes on, it isn't as if, you know, running from, you know, Laurel to Charlestown and or to West, you know, to I was going to say Waterford to Mountaineer, Penn National. There was the bad car accident that Wilmer Garcia, as a young rider, Wilmer Garcia had that terrible accident that he could have been killed. I mean, there's been that's a little much for you guys, you know. Traveling like that, riding in the afternoon and then going to ride at night, it's pretty treacherous.
Well, you know, the first time like I did it, I can remember I just lost the bug. I'm riding at Garden State and I got done. I was an early race. I got done and they said, you got to ride at Shenandoah tonight. Margaret McLennan's got you on a horse at Shenandoah. And we went and rode at Shenandoah.
Shenandoah?
Yeah, that was across the street from Charlestown and Shenandoah were together.
Oh, okay. All right. I was thinking, what was the track in Erie before Presque Isle?
Was it called Erie?
No, it was something like a Shenandoah Downs. It had a name like
Shenandoah and Charlestown were right next to each other. It was. You imagine that? You have a track on, and the trailer park was right on the other side of on the other side of Charlestown that Jimbo grew up in, and but you would run. They'd run me to Shenandoah, and they'd run me to Charlestown. You know, and coordinate them, and then they put Shenandoah finally closed, and it's just Charlestown to this day. But the first horse I rode at Shenandoah was after I rode an early race or two at Garden State, and the horse won. First race I rode at Shenandoah horse run, and I said, I got to find this picture because a lot of the tracks I rode at, Liberty Bell, Shenandoah, Garden State, You know, Atlantic City is virtually out of business. But these tracks, Bowie, I won the Campbell at Bowie, and I'm thinking, how many tracks had I ridden at that are no longer there? Suffolk, rode a horse or two there, Rockingham. I'll never forget Jimmy Cowden had a horse called Danny Dotsie, and she's in at Rockingham. She was a really good sprinter. And yeah. He flew me up there in his plane. He was his own pilot. And the horse got off bad, finished second, you know. And on the way back, I'll never forget what Jimmy Cowden did. On the way back, we're over to Hudson, and we're flying back. And the plane starts sputtering. And I don't know nothing about flying an airplane. He says, I forgot the fuel up. And he would stutter, you know. I said, what do you mean you forgot the fuel up? I forgot to put fuel. And I thought to myself, man, here the horse got left. We finished second. You forgot the fuel up, and we're going to land in the middle of the Hudson. And then he looks at me, and he turns the key or something, however you restart a plane. His eyes just breaking them. Yeah, I got plenty of fuel. We're all right, Black. Don't worry about it. I said, man, I got some real buttes I ride for. and you know what? This was the guy, I'm thinking, I'm getting off track on you, but this was a guy that had a pet cougar. He raised a cougar and
bring
it at the barn. And so we went home. I went to his house that night, right? Because we flew back and went to his house. And this cougar, and I'll never forget it, Charlie was the name of the cougar. He says, everybody's telling me I got to get rid of this cougar, and I got this cage for him, and he's like just a big kitty cat. This was a true story for the day that we had. So he says, look, he puts a piece of meat there and puts it in the cougar's mouth. He says, watch this, Black, and he pulls the piece of meat out. He says, you can't do this with a dog. He puts the meat back in the cougar's mouth, pulls it out, and you hear the cougar go, and he swats it. I couldn't even see the cougar's feet move. Never even saw his feet move, Charlie's feet. And I look down, and Jim Cowden's laying on the bottom of the cage, or this big, beautiful cage that he had for the cougar. And he sliced up from his scalp right to the skull bone. And I wound up taking him. We wound up going to emergency room at the hospital. And we're at the hospital. And they're stitching him back up like 250 stitches. And I thought, man, JR, JR Cowden. He used to call me Black. I'd call him JR. I said, man, we've had one hell of a day. We went to Rockingham, got left, got beat. Almost run out of gas with the plane. You're just breaking them. And here we come to your house, eat dinner, and Charlie swats you, and you're in the hospital. I said, what a day for a race tracker. And I don't even have to make these stories up.
No, that's... You know, sometimes everything goes right, and sometimes they don't. It is funny how the multiple, whenever there's travel involved, whether it's horse players' stories or whether it's you guys, taking a horse somewhere. Well, Mikey Arrow's got that crazy story where the van, right? The horse falls out of the van. I mean, there's unbelievable, crazy stories that you just can't make up. I mean, the Matisses tell their stories. You know, Saratoga going over to Great Barrington, or by the way, Commodore Downs is what we were trying to think of at Erie. That was the forerunner, and when Presque Isle opened, there had been references back to Commodore Downs.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot all about the names, man. All these tracks and the names, some of them we have to think about quite a while because they're no longer racing. But when we think of all the tracks that ran, and you think of Lincoln, Narragansett, all these tracks that are going, but the sport's still doing good, and we're lucky we got guys like you advertising it and talking good about it, because we're going to be here for a long time. Got to love this business. And got to love these horses. I flew to Louisiana with a horse when I was rubbing and galloping horses from New York. So we left New York on an airplane. The horse, this, we talk about stories and things happening. So we got down there, great trip, got to fairgrounds, right? It's for the Louisiana Derby. Tony Lagercio's on the horse. First jump out of the gate, balls on his head, Tony comes off. And that was my trip to the fairground for the Louisiana Derby. Now the owner says, well, we ain't flying back. He says, you're going to take a van back. I spent 31 hours on the van because one of the horses on the van got colic and sick, and we're looking for a vet on the road. I thought, here we are, a few hours to fly down here and 31 hours to get back with us. Or Belmont, we would say that. But there's a lot of stories out there when it comes to shipping. 31 hours in the back of the van.
That brings up the greatest travel story of all, which is the story Proctor told. For those that don't remember it, if you're a longtime listener, do you remember this train story about Proctor he's working for his dad?
No, you know what? I don't recall it.
This is the greatest story, and by all rights, Proctor should tell it because nobody can tell a story like the great one. He explained how, and I think it was for Glen Hill, for Mr. Lavin, and his father. They're in Chicago, and Willard tells Tom, "You're going to take the train with these mares to California." All right. So they load the, you said it was like four mares. He had to look after them on the train. So they load him up, and train pulls out of Chicago. And they're, you know, a couple hours into the trip. And Proctor realizes he doesn't have anything to eat. He starts to get hungry. But he's not in a section of the train where he can get to the dining car. He can't. You know, they keep those cattle cars. You know, the freight side is segregated from the passenger side. So now they're going, and you know, Proctor's a big boy. So he said they pulled into Kansas City, and he didn't know anything. He didn't know how long the train is going to be sitting at the wayside there. He said he jumped off the train. He had some money. He jumped off the train, ran in the station. He grabbed a quart of milk and a bunch of bananas. And he said, tasted like steak and champagne. could you see me? Proctor's locked up in a cattle car, essentially.
He needed for some grain to eat.
Unbelievable.
You know, it's something, some of the stories that you can tell that are true about shipping around with horses. I mean, I flew down to Louisiana, I'll never forget this, too, with this horse, Special Glow, his name was, right? And it was, you know, trip where he fell leaving the gate, and that was the end of the story. But I'll never forget, when they loaded him in the plane, and I never flew with a horse, they loaded him sideways instead of back to front. You know, where as you take off, if a plane climbs, if he's loaded the length of the plane, he has no problem. I think it's the length of the plane. They loaded him wrong, whatever they did. They loaded him the width of the plane. So now, and he's in the, you ever see the crates that they put him in? They're just enough there for them to stand up.
Yeah. Well,
the plane's taken off, and then we're flying. He's paddling sideways to stay up in this crate. And you can hear, you know, I mean, he's struggling to stay up because the plane, the momentum of the plane going up, and he's trying to stay up in this crate. And these crates, they're pretty strong, but who knows how strong it is. And he's raising hell and making noise, and they loaded him wrong. The guy, one of the pilots or whatever it was, co-pilot, comes back there, and he's got a gun. He said, if he breaks loose, he's dead. I said, what? He said, if he breaks loose, he's going to be dead. I think, how do you shoot a gun in an airplane, you know, to kill a horse? I'm thinking, this trip, I'll never forget it, to Louisiana. It was, it definitely wasn't blessed from the beginning, but I never forget when he came back there with a gun, and he said, if he busts that.
Oh, crate, my God.
The crates are just wide enough for the horse to be in.
Yeah.
And now you can imagine a plane going straight up, you know, and he's paddling to stay up because the momentum's throwing him sideways into the side of the crate. Instead of going back, into the back of the crate, not the side. And I'll never forget that trip. Boy, that was something to remember, and you think to yourself, and that was the year before I started riding. No wonder I wanted to ride so bad, just so I wouldn't be exposed to that stuff anymore.
That's crazy. I'm just looking at this horse. Was this in the '80s or was it?
Was it in the '70s?
Because there, well, there's
69.
Been. Well, because there's been...
Because I hadn't started riding yet. I was just galloping horses, and I was riding one or two for Charlie Coco. So this was Louisiana Derby in 69. He fell on his head leaving the gate. Tony DeGuercio came off of him, and that was the end of the race. And it poured rain, and I slept in the stall the night before.
Unbelievable. Well, because, okay, here he is. Special Glow was a Fred Hooper bred him. The record is very incomplete, but was a Special Monte... son and out of a Jet Jewel mare named Haze Glow, but the record is totally incomplete.
The fairgrounds is the Louisiana Derby. That was one of few of his last races. He only had a few after that. I was his gallop boy and groom. I rubbed the best horse in the barn and galloped 10, 12, 15 every morning.
I love it. Unbelievable.
That's what contract jocks did. When you were a bug boy, you know, you're under contract. That's the kind of stuff you did. You rubbed. You know, I might wake up at 5 in the morning, catch 10, 12 stalls, you know.
Unbelievable.
Throw all the stalls in the back, you know, and get first set ready to go out. And that's what you did as a bug boy when you were under contract to a trainer in the 60s.
Tony, no, not trying to cast aspersions on your height, but if you're grooming a tall horse, what do you have? You got to get on a step stool or a bucket or something.
Yeah, you know what? You do a lot of stretching, and most of the time you can reach every part of them that you really have to reach. The one thing that you would be a little bit trying experience would be if it was a horse that was tough to put a bridle on. You know, if it was one of them horses, as soon as he felt the bit in his mouth, he'd raise his head up. Boy, I usually did pretty good. I got a little bit of my animals that I dropped. I was 4'11 and can do it. You know, not to change the subject, but I just want to mention one thing. When we first came on, you were talking about the passing of certain, you know, of people and horses.
Yep, Mrs. Abercrombie.
And I saw the passing of Bert Sonnier.
Yes, and, we talked to Dash Goff on Tuesday.
Yeah. I rode a lot for Bert at Arlington Park.
Oh, wow.
It was 80 and 81.
Yeah.
When I went out there. I went out there with Dick Fisher. He was the assistant for Lasseter and Vance. And when they kind of went separate ways, he became an agent, Dick Fisher. And he took my book. He said, let's go to Arlington for the Arlington meet. So we went out there, and he hooked up with Bert Sonnier. He had about 40 horses at the time, rode me on just about everything. And he made a big difference in going to a place that I'd never been to and giving me a chance to ride for him. And he was a great guy to ride for. You know, I only had a lot of contact with him those first few years, you know, those 2 years in 80, 81. But a great guy to ride for, never complained, and had the attitude is, if you messed it up, then maybe you won't next time. Those guys are best to ride for when they're like that. But he was a good guy, and it's sad. It's sad, but you know what? They're the guys that were mainstay in racing at some point or another in their career, and they were good horsemen, and they made a big difference to a lot of young guys, trainers, jockeys, because they were willing to give you a chance, and that's all you wanted was a chance. And Bert gave me a big chance at Arlington and rode a lot of horses for him and enjoyed doing it. So guys like that will be missed in this business. Rest in peace, Bert.
Well, and you know, the Tuesday we had Dash Goff to talk about Bert Sonnier and of course No Double, but you know, with the passing of Billy Turner as well. You know, Bert Sonnier is a name that you know, because he's, you know, hadn't trained in close to 20 years, that people really needed to know and hear. So I'm glad you brought that up, as well as another famous character from the game's history, Tricky Dick Fisher.
Yeah, Tricky Dick. He was with Lasseter and Vance when they were really in their heyday and winning nothing but races. And Lasseter, I guess he had started, what was it, Ponderosa? Was that Lasseter?
I think, yeah.
No, Ponderosa, wasn't it, the steakhouses?
I at least was a franchisee. I don't know if he started it, but was he a big franchisee, maybe?
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I forget. But, you know, we think of all those guys that we came around with or we had contact with. Even to this day, and then Dick Fisher, he's passed on. He went back home, I guess, Mexico or wherever it was. And, you know, guys like that, they were important to the business. They worked hard and they, you know, they made their mark on the business. And here we, you know, you see guys that you rode for that made a difference in my career.
Sure.
And I was thinking, you know, I saw a picture of Jack Vanberg and I got a book that he signed for me from Grit to Glory and he gave me his copy and signed it. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, these guys, they were an important part of this business. They made their mark. They had integrity, credibility, good horsemen. And what else do you want to be associated with is that people like that? Integrity, credibility, horsemen, people who cared about horses and people. But that was a guy like Bert Sonia, a guy like Jack Vanberg, you know, or a guy like Dick Fisher, who was an agent and a stable agent and then became a jocks agent. They cared about people. And that's all you want to be associated with when it comes to horse racing and people in this business, people who care.
No doubt. No doubt, Tony. Well, and Sean Clancy, who's listening in, Sean has got that same, you know, that same attitude and approach and dedication, same, very similar, that is part of the game's history. Tony, it's great to kick the year off with a rollicking conversation. We will catch up next week.
All right, Steve. Keep up the good work. You know I love you, brother, and it's always a pleasure. Take care.
Tony Black, love you. We'll stay right here and say happy, healthy new year to Sean Clancy.
Hi, Steve. Happy New Year, buddy.
How was the holiday season?
It was good. It got, like everybody, COVID dominated. We went to Alabama to see my wife's family for the first time in 2 years, and all was beautiful until a couple of people came down with COVID, so we jumped in the car and fled home like robber barons across the border. And so far, we're healthy and happy. The Clancy family has yet to see Miles, Annie, and me, but we're working on that. So, you know, it's 2021 or 2022, I guess, now. It's just how we
wow.
Do. Hey, it was fun. Everybody's healthy, happy. It was a nice little break, and now we got to get back to work.
Well, the other thing, everybody's glad to hear that health-wise, that you guys seem to have escaped without incident. The health of the Christmas tree is the first order of business that everybody. That's the only mail I got all during the holiday break was about Clancy's Christmas tree. That's a story that's going to go down in show lore. People loved it.
No, exactly. We've talked about Eclipse Awards and champions and pick sixes and you know all that and the biggest. The biggest hit we ever made was the Christmas tree off the back of the sister-in-law's pickup truck. As of right now, the Christmas tree is in the shed trying to reacclimate to the weather. And I got to say, it looks not very promising for the future. I'm afraid it might be one that goes to the compost pile, and I know you're gleefully laughing as you put away your artificial Christmas tree with the fake wintergreen incense bomb spray that you spray every year. And maybe yours is still up, probably still going strong. Do you just leave yours up for next year? You probably do. Maybe just put like a curtain around it, or maybe decorate it for Valentine's Day or St. Patrick's Day. I mean, maybe it's just a year-round thing around that. I don't know. But ours is shaky at best. I'll give you that.
Well, I'm sorry to hear it, because I was rooting. Not that story. Because the picture that I, you know,
I don't hear sorrow. I just don't hear sorrow in your voice. I hear gleefulness. A little bit of, I don't know, a little smugness. Actually, I think I hear smugness.
I don't want Merry Christmas. Well, merry to the Clancys. I really did do you dirty with that picture, because people believed picture I put up was
wrong. That was wrong. I mean, it was fun. It was a fun kind of camaraderie, shared kind of moment. And then you have the audacity to put it wasn't even a Charlie Brown tree. It was worse than Charlie Brown tree on the internet, and it just goes viral, and people think that was actually our tree. But, yeah, that was cool. Paybacks are hell, buddy.
I will.
Paybacks are hell.
There'll be a story
about you taking my keys at Saratoga and walking off. Do I need to tell that story again? I mean,
that's a classic. That's a classic.
I'll bring out a few more.
Well,
should I let you talk now?
No, you don't have to. We're happy to let you, free reign.
Right? For you, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. You just have somebody talking instead of you, right?
No, you know, it is funny, actually, when you think about it, how many goofy incidents we've been able to produce in a fairly short period of time. I mean,
there will be more.
Well, and I've got these. What's nice is between you and Joe and Tom, I'm able to, you know, I'm crafting individual. You know, there's me meeting Law at the Saratoga Target, at the Wilton Target, to for him to give me that McKay Award. That was the presentation in a wet snowstorm. So there, we got that. That's a classic.
That's a first. That's definitely a first. First award that's ever been given at the Wilton Target.
Yeah,
or it was Clifton Target or whatever you're talking about.
Exactly, and then of course there's Flop Sweat. We got Flop Sweat to play with.
Flop Sweat. That was a classic in television history.
I'm gonna have to go to look at the Jockey Club online names book and see if Flop Sweat is available.
Oh,
because
yeah, we gotta reserve that.
That would be. You must have a story or two.
Try to find a front running sprinter who gets tired at the end. Is that what you're looking for Flop Sweat?
Well, it's funny.
A long sprinter who gets the eighth pole 10 in front and just tries to get home. Sorry, I'm picking on Tom. That's not right.
Well, that's, you know, it's funny you say that. What
more
about
like a
what?
One turn mile. He's better than a 7 furlong sprinter that's getting tired.
But what about that? The people that name a horse, the people that name a horse that pretty much doom it. The name is an indication that the horse doesn't have a lot of talent. You do get those.
Sure.
You know, not Swift or whatever. You know, I've seen a few of those over the years.
Oh, it's funny. I always laugh at this. Sometimes you see those stallions that are, you know, the horses go to their stud career, and I do wonder. I always wonder if their names affect their success. You know, there's some stallions out there. You're just like, do I really want to tell people I bred their horse Sir Prance-a-Lot? He's actually a good stallion. I like.
Yes, he is.
And the horses come over here and run well, but it's like, do you? And now at least he's kind of established. But did you want to from the beginning? Did you want to say, yeah, I bred my mare to Sir Prance-a-Lot? I always wonder if that affects the outcome or the success for stallions.
Well, it's funny.
You want to breed to a big, strong, strong name. Like, yeah, I bred to, Hard Spun or Diodoro sounds tough and
That's fair.
Right?
Well, it's funny you bring up Sir Prance-a-Lot, because on Monday, sort of had a flight line special where Sadler was on with us first and then David and Gordo. And when we started talking about flight line and the family, there's a younger sister that they bought. I happened to bring her up and David laughed and he said, "I'm looking out the window at her. She's right there." And she was covered by Sir Prancelot. They bought her in full and so Flightline's going to have a half sis by Sir Prancelot any day.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, he's a good stallion. He's very good for American turf racing, that's for sure.
And Sid is, you know, Sid has said nice things. Is, you know, we've definitely covered him and talked about him. Speaking of Flightline and the topics of the fortnight during Christmas, New Year's. Some thoughts about your eclipse ballot, thoughts about the racing we've seen. We also got to deal with the sadness, too, Sean, between Billy Turner and all week long I've had to deal with some prominent passings, starting with Billy and then Bert Sonnier, then DeHaas, and now Mrs. Abercrombie and Susie O'Kane.
Yeah, it's tough, you know. Billy Turner kind of hits all of us hard, certainly Mrs. Abercrombie as well. Susie O'Kane, they were just real kind of, they were just rocks in our game. You know, those people you just kind of counted on to do their thing. As I said to you in a text, I didn't know Billy Turner very well. I was kind of sad when I look back on it, I think, God, I never wrote a column about Billy Turner in all the years of the special, and I really didn't. I don't know why. I somehow just missed it. I mean, I knew him as a friend, but not. I just didn't know him as well as I would have liked. I remember some stories, and you heard those great stories about him all the way back to when they buried him in the manure pit at Mr. Cox's to try to lose weight to be a jump jockey. And, just a hard guy, hard miles, obviously recovering alcoholic. I think that was, probably one of the big parts of his life that he overcame that. And I remember my father, who's also recovering alcoholic, talking about Billy Turner. I remember Patty Nelson, another recovering alcoholic who sadly we lost. And Patty Nelson went to try to get Billy Turner into rehab. And, I think that was a big, kind of defining moment of his life. And, what he did with Seattle Slough, you look back at that, a guy that managed that horse and sadly, when you tweeted the story about the Belmont, it was amazing to read that story about in the Sports Illustrated. And now knowing what happened, the ending was brilliant. It was like, the Slough crew was going to take some time to think about what they were going to do next. And from there, just nothing, it certainly wasn't, it was Billy Turner's quote, you realize how it didn't turn out the way he wanted. But, losing him's tough. Mrs. Abercrombie, same thing, just a great horsewoman, a icon of our sport, that dedicated, owner, breeder that was in it for the long haul, in it for the good of the game, good of the horse. There's so few of those types of people left that it's hard to say goodbye to one like that. Susie O'Kane, same thing, just the Saratoga mainstay. Everybody kind of knew her and, great lady and, dedicated to our sport. So, yeah, as I said, I didn't know Bert Sonnier very well. I mean, I knew his name but didn't know him. And it's tough. It's like seems like there's always these January kind of gloom. I don't know. It's hard.
No, it's. I didn't know if it's just bad luck, a spate of, what it was. Hey, at the same time, in the middle yesterday, Michael Dickinson joined us and celebrated DeHaas. And whenever there's a horse that passes, he was 30 years old. And
yeah, cool.
I always think of Shug. Shug is always stoic about this, and he says, "Look," he says, "that's part of it, and you just gotta appreciate what they did." And one thing that's come up even today, when I talked to Graham Motion, I hadn't looked at Broken Vow's career in years, and you forget about you certainly remember I mean, I think Broken Vow is thought of much more as obviously as a stallion these days. But De Haas, everybody talks about the second Breeders' Cup win. But there's a lot more to him than that second Breeders' Cup win. I mean, he was a tremendous career.
No, for sure. Great horse. I mean, he's kind of known for that singular moment, but he had a hell of a career beyond that singular moment, the comeback in the Breeders' Cup. I'm looking out of my farm right now and looking at Eagle Poise out there. There's Kiss and Conquest, who I think just turned 20, and border agents out there. These guys are old timers. They're getting up into their 20s, and if they can live that kind of life, it's hard to be. It's a great passage of time. I mean, a horse like the Haas, when he does die at 30, it's to me, it's a passage of time. It's not a. It's almost just sad in a way that, yeah, you look at your life and go, whoa, but to live till he's 30, to live the life that he lived, to touch the amount of people that he did, I mean, what a success story, what a life, I think for anybody, people, horses, if you can live that kind of life and touch people and make an impact and make a positive difference in the world, look, that's success, if all these horses, if they can live that kind of life, it's, again, you can look at it. It's more, for me personally, it's more, a passage of time rather than being sad that they're gone. I mean, if we could all live a life like the Haas, man, that would be, we'd all take that.
Exactly.
Horses, humans alike.
Sean Clancy with us. And, Sean, I've got Tony Alivato coming up in just a minute or two. But how about a 2022 resolution? What do you resolve to accomplish in this
well,
new year?
Personally, I'm an Aries, so I'm all or nothing. So last year I declared these resolutions. I was going to run 1,000 miles, write 365 days of the year, and read 52 books, which I went 0-3 if you're counting. And Joe and Tom Law, they just beat me up. They've of course got their thousands. Joe scoffed at my other resolutions, which he was right. So I'm taking a different tack this year. My resolution, and I don't know if it can help anybody, but my resolution this year is those kind of things for sure. You got to set your goals, but I'm actually going to try to do a monthly resolution, which perhaps will keep me on target. I think we do these New Year's resolutions January 1st, then we lose track of them, and then come December, you look back on them, and you feel like you didn't accomplish what you wanted to do. So one of my resolutions is to do a monthly resolution to say, where am I, how have I done, what do I have to do to try to accomplish some of these goals. So that's one resolution. And I, as a, personally, yeah, sure, it's those kind of things. Love River D to win some more races, accomplish big things, obviously come back for a Saratoga Special again and do what we always do, but better. And as a whole, I just think you try to make I think COVID has affected all of us. I think if we can keep that in mind, to just try to be, make a positive difference, just try to reach out to our friends and family, and just try to make a positive difference in any way we can. I think that's important.
Well, and for those that think that perhaps a monthly resolution is not practical, then maybe quarterly. How about quarterly? I think I'll try quarterly.
Well, if you can't, that's what I mean. Like the New Year's resolutions, I mean, that's the epitome of impracticality, right? You're like declaring, I'm going to make these, or here are my resolutions, and then they fade, a lot of them fade. So if you got to get away from the yearly New Year's resolutions and try to do monthly or quarterly or whatever you need to do. But that's, I don't know if it'll work. I'll let you know in 12 months if it kept me kind of directed and focused on some of these resolutions. We'll see. I've read 3 books so far, so that's a good start. I've run 5. Now, that's 3 books coming from Christmas to now, so I'm giving myself 6 days head start. I read actually Pat Smullen's book, Champion, which is quite good. You ought to read that. And I read a book called The Other Wes Moore, which is brilliant. That's something somebody everybody should read. I actually started it a couple years ago, lost it, and picked it up again. That's quite good.
Nice. All right. Well, that then what we're going to do in your visits every couple of weeks, you will update everybody on what you've read.
Okay, sounds good.
Just, all right.
See if I can keep that keep going on that resolution, Zach. That'll keep my feet to the fire a little. Exactly. Good.
Sean Clancy, everybody who you follow on Twitter, by Sean Clancy. This is horseracing.com. The first of our conversations with Sean and Tom Law and Joe Clancy as well. Thanks a lot, Sean. Make it a great year.
You too, Steve. Happy New Year.
Sean Clancy, everybody. We'll stay right here for a few minutes. We got a little opportunity to check in with Tony Olivato from NYRA and basically say congratulations, Tony, and to Mike Mulvihill at Fox and everybody involved in the deal that brings the Belmont Stakes to Fox Sports. Good morning. Happy New Year.
Good morning. Happy New Year, Steve.
Tony, I think some people were somewhat surprised, even though this had been rumored. It's very similar to what happened during that period when ABC came in and had Belmont Stakes coverage for a window.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, look, there was a lot that went into this decision. We didn't take it lightly. We've had a great relationship with NBC. I mean, it's no different than when we, left TVG with Belmont Races and Saratoga to go to Fox. We had to really give it a lot of thought because, sometimes change is good, but there is risk that's involved. And, listening to, both parties and what Fox was bringing to the table, it was really hard to turn them down. So, obviously there's a little bit of risk of not having the Triple Crown on the same network. But I think that, the sports television world has changed so much. It's not like the olden days where, people had a few channels and they were used to tuning into a certain place. If I'm going to watch the Auburn-Alabama football game, I'll find it. It doesn't matter whether it's on ESPN or ABC or CBS. So we're not just worried about that. And, Fox is really all about celebrating sport. And that's their motto. And we like what they do. And they've got some really, really big plans for the Belmont. And I think horse racing fans, the people who are traditionalists and like to bet, are really going to be happy with the type of coverage they provide. And those who like the glitz and glamour of the traditional Triple Crown coverage and the pageantry are going to be satisfied as well. They've got some real big ideas.
There's obviously a lot of continuity that making this arrangement it provides, given 750 hours of coverage on Fox with the America's Day at the Races segments, and then of course the Saratoga Live. So there kind of feels, Tony, like this was a natural, and there had been plenty of speculation about this happening.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a natural step, but, NBC has been a great partner, and anytime, it's tough. It's a tough decision to make. So, like I said, Fox is looking at television from a non-traditional model. The old model of how many people are watching, what's the demographic, how much can we charge for commercials. That doesn't work well for horse racing because our audience skews older. Hmm. And we have some more audiences watching. But, pardon me, now with the advent of sports betting sweeping the country, you've got a different opportunity for revenue for a group like Fox to take advantage of, and that's what's really helped us out in this deal.
Well, and part of this too, you mentioned the landscape on the gaming front. And in fact, Jeff Canizzo was with us, and he brought up the hope and expectation that there can be integrated gaming on platforms long term. But one of the things that has really made this so successful is having somebody like Mike Mulvihill, who is an active and serious horse player, you know, understanding what horse players want. That's been a major plus, it seems to me, in how the game is presented on Fox, and you know, their eagerness to be, you know, in the racing business.
Yeah, there's two executives at Fox. There's Mike Mulvihill, who you just mentioned, who is just the biggest fan of horse racing in sports television. There's another gentleman by the name of Ed Hartman, who is a former jockey from Australia, who's in the is an executive vice president there. Worked, I think, for Darley at one point.
Wow.
And he's another huge horse racing fan. And you know, they just the two of them, they really believe in horse racing, and they believe in the value of it. They believe in the sport. They believe in what it has to offer. And they also believe that with everything that's going on right now with sports betting, that horse racing is going to really play an integral role in filling out the entire day for people who are betting on sports and watching live sports at the same time. And, you know, if you look at what people bet on from a sports standpoint, they're betting on what they watch on TV. So why won't they do the same thing with horse racing? And that's why the 700, 800 hours that you talked about are so important. And now as we look at the next 8 years, beginning in 2023, what we're doing with these shows, it's really critical that we capture that audience that is now been betting on sports and are looking to bet on horse racing, but maybe they don't know as much about it, and they want to feel comfortable, and they want to have a good opinion. And that's where, you know, you've got people like Maggie and Wolfendale and Andy and Jonathan Kinchin and the team, and hopefully they'll be involved in that broadcast. But they bring that, they're able to help educate and inform the audience that's watching. I think our team does a really terrific job of that.
Well, and people, of course, should appreciate that Fox has been broadcasting Travers now for a couple of years, and you know, the virtually a daily 6 hour in some cases production. It to me, this was a natural next step. And now, of course, NBC will have Belmont this year, but then the deal starts for subsequently.
Correct. And, you know, I think it's important to say, I think that horse racing's on the upswing. And if you look at, with all the issues that you could say that we have in horse racing, there is a lot of positive that is going on right now and a lot of good that is going on. You've got two networks that are televising horse racing, as you just mentioned. One of them, 24 hours a day. Another one, 5-6 hours a day. Between TVG and Fox, FS1 and FS2. And then you've got two networks now that are covering the Triple Crown and other big races between NBC and Fox. And I think that when you create competition, it only makes the product better for the viewer. And if you look at horse racing in general and you look at where we've gone, I mean, the deal with Fox started in 2016. At that point, the handle in the U.S. on thoroughbred racing was like $10.7 billion. This year we went over $12.2 billion for the whole country. So that's when I say that horse racing is an upswing, that's a perfect example of it. And look, you know, Naira handles it, you know, was at $2.3 billion last year. So, you know, the horse racing is in a good position. I think that the television has really made a big impact. And I think that things are going to get better over the next 8 years. I think we're really in a great spot. The industry has positioned itself well for all the mistakes that have been made in the past. This is one time that I feel like everybody's kind of doing the right thing.
Well, the numbers, and I did mention, you know, they finalized those figures from the 2021, the proliferation of Naira bets around the country as contributed, and the television exposure. In fact, this topic came up yesterday too, about you know, this has been one of the industry's bright lights and real positives. And this was identified by the Jockey Club, you know, a decade ago as part of that McKinsey study, that if the game was exposed on a very regular basis, if every time people put their television on, they could find, you know, some racing coverage. And that has really been what this America's Day at the Races show. I mean, it really has exceeded expectation, Tony, because I don't think anybody ever expected it to be virtually a year-round program.
We didn't expect it.
In
fact, we kept it. You know, we were supposed to end the show with Cigar Mile Day, and we kept it going. And listen, a credit to the team that worked on it day in and day out, because it's really a lot of work for that team. And you know, when you think your season is going to be over, and then the next thing you know, you find out it's not. You're going to continue working. It's not. Necessarily a great feeling, but they, to their credit, have done a great job, and it reflected in our numbers in December. The numbers for Aqueduct and Oaklawn were terrific. Those are the two tracks that are being featured right now on America's Day at the Races. So, you know, it's really helped us. You know, and the thing that should be mentioned is one of the things that's great about the deal with Fox, and you know, unlike with TVG is an ADW company that. They don't own any content. So for them, people who are watching those races and betting with other ADWs, they don't benefit from that. But with NYRA, when we're televising horse racing, and look, we prefer that people bet with NYRA bets. Obviously, we'd make an extra sliver on that, but we're getting paid on the bets no matter what, and the money's going into horse racing and going into the pool. So the more exposure that we can give New York racing, the better handle's going to be. And then on the flip side, you look at Fox, and now Fox, who also has a piece of NYRA bets, they're getting paid as well. So that's where we've kind of changed the model, and I think that it's really worked out. So for us, look, we want people to bet with NYRA bets. We think our platform's great, but we just want people watching our racing and becoming fans and wagering on them, and we think that's helping the industry. And ultimately, the goal is to try and get more owners in the sport and get more fans in the stands. And that's what we're ultimately trying to do. And then making sure when those owners and those fans come to the races, it's a great experience for them. So this is all a kind of a big puzzle that we're putting the pieces together, and hopefully this deal for the Belmont Stakes is just one more piece of the puzzle being put in place.
Well, Tony, congratulations to everybody involved in this. Fox has been just instrumental in making this all work. We don't get to watch Triple Crown broadcasts very often because we're typically at the track, but it certainly is a piece of news that it will provide, you know, continuity, and imagine based on Fox's positioning right now of racing, just shows how committed they are, and that they want to have a part of the Triple Crown, and hopefully several attempts at Triple Crowns over the course of the broadcasts.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. I'm thankful to be a part of the NYRA team and to be involved in this, and appreciate the support that, you know, you've given us, Steve, and you were behind this, you know, years ago. So when we before we had a lot of success with that, so hopefully we can keep it going, and the shows can keep getting better, and people will keep watching.
Tony Alivato, everybody, and the New York Racing Association and Fox Sports with the Belmont Stakes moving next year to Fox. Tony, continued success. Happy, healthy New Year to you and everybody at NYRA.
Take care, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
We'll talk soon. Tony Alivato, everybody, and you know what has become just a literally full-time, you know, television production of racing. Nobody expected. Fox has been so aggressive and so receptive to utilize. Racing's a full day, right? It's 5 hours of content. And content is the key. See, I would imagine not only imagine Belmont Stakes itself, you know, will be on probably, you know, on the big network, but the Belmont Stakes Festival, the Thursday Friday action leading up to Saturday, and you know, the monster day that Belmont Stakes Day has become, you're going to get, you know, that much more exposure as part of it. So this reminds of the ABC of that period. That was I think I saw in one of the articles. What were the dates? Let me see. Yeah, ABC ESPN was 2006 to 2010. And then back to NBC for a decade, essentially. Yeah. So, new era. Let's take a break. We're about 15 minutes into hour three. Rich Eng in a little bit. I think, I don't think we're going to get Donnie K. He's got horses out on the track with the way training hours have been kind of shifted at Oaklawn. So I may have to figure out a different window to get Donnie. But back after this either way, at the races. Hour three next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us. There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016,